Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. As the incidence of childhood poverty increases in Central Ohio and across the nation, so does the incidence of failure in school, at home, and in life, and for most of these kids. Often just one person can make a difference. Sometimes that person is called a mentor. Joining us today to talk about mentoring and why it can help, especially during hard times, is Ann Bischoff. She's a mentor, child advocate, and senior policy analyst for Kids Ohio. Welcome, Ann.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
And also Marilyn Pritchett. She's director of the Mentoring Center of Central Ohio. It's a service and a training hub for more than 40 local mentoring organizations. Thanks for joining us, Marilyn.
We're delighted to be here.
And Cornell Lewis. He's a firefighter and
yes,
a paramedic
ma'am.
With the City of Columbus Division of Fire. He's also executive director and founder of Expanding Visions Foundation. It's a nonprofit mentoring organization. He also is a mentor. Marilyn, I imagine you are too.
I have been up until this year.
Okay. Well, that counts. And in fact, Cornell, you were 2010 Outstanding Mentor of the Year.
Yes, I was for the Mentoring Center of Central Ohio.
Okay. Well, congratulations. Well,
thank you. Now I have to earn it.
I see. It's always in advance.
Sure.
All right.
Sure.
And can we just start at the, I guess, sort of what I think of as the beginning? How do we know that mentoring helps? Anecdotally, it makes complete sense on a logical level. Of course it helps. But how do we know it helps? Because that's what a lot of people base their decision to invest in it.
Right. Well, I think most people would be surprised to know that 40% of school children in Ohio live in poverty, and that's up from 35% just 3 years ago. Right here in Franklin County, school children, there are 73,000 school children living in poverty. That's about 4 in every 9 kids. If we were to gather these kids into one place, Buckeye Stadium, for example, these 73,000 kids would fill nearly 3/4 of the Buckeye Stadium. That's a lot of kids. These children are more likely to be the first person in their family who would go to college.
If they received the mentoring, are you saying, or?
I'm saying just in general.
Okay.
In general, children living in poverty. And they're less likely to know how to navigate the education system from high school on to career and college. And this is at a time when the jobs that will be available for the middle and high schoolers of today when they become adults will require at least a bachelor's degree or a high-level career certificate such as a registered nursing. So this is where mentors come in.
How do we know they help, though? Like I said, it's anecdotally and on a logical mm-hmm. level, it makes sense that it would help. But how do we know? Again, because people think about investing money in this and supporting it. How do you tell them that this is worth their investment?
In my experience, I've seen it work. A lot of the data is anecdotal, and Marilyn may be able to speak a little bit better to the statistical information, but I can tell you from my personal experience that working with children to set goals and to set high expectations makes all the difference in the world. What this one-on-one attention makes all the difference in the world, Marilyn.
We also know that according to a study that was done by Public-Private Ventures about 10 years ago, that kids that had a mentor were 52% less likely to skip school. They were 27% less likely to get involved with alcohol. A whole range of negative behaviors were not happening because the kids had a mentor. And 59% of them expanded their goals. Those are critical differences in terms of attending classes, being able to graduate because they've got the academic support that is needed to help them get through school and go on to college or other post-secondary education. So there is a lot of statistical and other information out there that validates that this is the case.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about mentoring and what it means, particularly in these down times when more children than ever are growing up in impoverished households, sometimes with only one parent, too often with only one parent, and they need some help. And sometimes that is called a mentor. If my guest today, Marilyn Pritchett, she is executive director of the Mentoring Center of Central Ohio, and also Ann Bischoff, she is a senior policy analyst for Kids Ohio, and Cornell Lewis, he's executive director and founder of Expanding Visions Foundation. How do you define a mentor? Is it an official definition, or is it just something we feel?
We say that it is a caring, trusted person who has an ongoing relationship with a young person. Sometimes that mentor is an adult. Sometimes they are a slightly older youth that is also involved as a mentor. So the consistency, the continuity of the relationship is a really critical factor.
When did mentoring get to be a profession? I know that people volunteer to mentor typically, but when did it become something that you professionally nurtured?
Well, the Mentoring Center has existed since 2000. Our national organization has existed 20 years, I believe. So certainly in this last time frame, it's become a much more known idea. It's true that when I started with Mentoring Center almost 10 years ago, we always had to explain what we meant when we said the word mentor. Now, when you pick up the newspaper, there is almost always a story on somebody that is mentoring somebody else, because it really has entered the common way that we discuss what we do with other people, whether it's adult to youth or adult to adult. We're really pretty convinced as a society, I believe, that this is a critical way to develop human beings to the optimum that they can be.
And it can be informal. It could be formal. Cornell, I noticed on your LinkedIn profile that getting your master's degree was a major accomplishment. And you said that was because people told your mother you would never amount to anything. So I have to imagine you must have had a mentor somewhere down the road that said you would amount to something.
Yes, I did. And when I was a young man, there was a lot of issues in my life. My father was not there. And when you talk about statistics these days, you have probably 7 out of 10 young men, black males especially, without a father in the home. And those numbers are astronomical, okay? And so we've got 2.2 million people in prison across this country. Of that, 66% of them are black males. And of that, most of them are ages 18 to 34. So I was coming up in a project area here in Columbus, Ohio, in the South End that was inundated with drugs and alcohol, things of that nature. And so I got into some of these things. I got into different things that, you know, your teenagers would get into, but we were exposed. My mother did not give up on me. So many times people told her, you need to give up on him because he's going the way that most go. As a matter of fact, she had a psychiatrist tell her, you need to give up on him. And so it was a tough time for a single mother with 5 children in the projects. So as it stood, my older brother left for college in 1985. And I was very, you know, we didn't understand college. We didn't know what college was all about. We thought he had left and gone to the moon as far as we were concerned. You know, there weren't college degrees where we come from. So my mother was told to give up on me. But in that respect, having a mentor in my life, which was my former pastor, James Carter Sr., he really hung in there with us. He had that male role model to all the young men who he was dealing with. And one of the few men in our community that was working every day, was proud to be working where he was working at, and cared about us. He actually cared. And so he gave us projects on Saturdays, like putting shingles on roofs. I didn't know a thing about that. Caulking windows and so on and so forth. And he never paid us. He paid us in tuna fish sandwiches and powdered donuts and lemonade. And so seeing him, I've tried to model my life after him. And being the type of role model that he was, I've tried to be that same type of man. And it has I've gone beyond that now to get that master's degree. And simply because – and I owe it to my mother. I owe it to my former pastor. And I owe it to all the people who hung in there with me. You know, even when your own friends are telling you, give up on him. When your own family's telling you, give up on him. That's kind of tough.
Cornell, when you were going through all this as a young man. Did you look at your pastor and think of him as a mentor? Did you know what he was doing?
Oh, no. I hated the man's guts. Couldn't stand him. You know, he made me do things that I could not possibly see were going to help me. As we deal with the young men in the Expanding Visions program, all of our mentors are understand, because I try to set the standard that you're not dealing with a perfect individual. You're not dealing with someone who is going to love you for everything you tell them and everything you say and do, because that's an unrealistic relationship. But you must continue to push. You must continue to give them the love. You must continue to listen and care. And it is necessary that you understand that this is a lifetime commitment, because once you get into this young man's life, he's going to see you for everything that he really wants to be. And I didn't like the man telling me to do anything, but I did it. And now, you know, I see the benefit.
And when you look back, do you wonder, why did you do it then? Why didn't you just run off and
I ran off plenty of times. It's just that my mother would beat me right back over there. I'd run off constantly. And it was to the point where people really hated to see me coming. And that's the truth. Thank you, Marilyn.
That's perfectly nice,
Thank
folks.
You for laughing about that, Marilyn. I'm a great, wonderful man now. Ask my
yes.
wife, Shelley.
Yeah.
But as it stands.
Well, you're a firefighter
exactly,
and a paramedic.
I made it.
Yeah.
But people hated to see me coming. And so I ran off plenty of times. But my mother was adamant that we were going to become more than she was. She was adamant that we were not going to become our environment.
Now, when did it occur to you that you could be a mentor?
Actually, when I had my son Lance.
Funny how it does that.
It does. You know, the cookie on the floor is dirty now. I would have eaten that cookie before I had a kid, but now it's a dirty cookie.
Don't believe in the 5-second
rule,
huh?
Don't eat that. Yeah, don't eat that. So when I had him, I just remember realizing I don't know how to be a father. I had never had that before, and I did not know how to be a father. And so I prayed. I asked God. I said, you got to make me a father. I don't know how to do it. I don't know what I'm doing. But I realized something as I looked into his eyes as he got older, that he didn't care if I was inadequate. He didn't care if I didn't have a lot of money. He didn't care if I was, you know, rich or a great basketball player, great baseball player. All he cared about is that I cared about him. And so in that respect, in 1993, I got out of the military, and he was in a classroom at Southmore Middle School, and I went over there because he had some issues with the teacher. And he was, you know, when I walked into the classroom, people started scooting away from him because they weren't used to seeing a black male as large as I am walking into a classroom. And so the teacher asked me to speak to her class to keep me from disciplining my son in the classroom. So I began to speak to those kids. Next thing I know, I was back there every Tuesday. And the next thing I know, they were in the windows waiting on me on Tuesday at 1 o'clock to come back and talk to them. And so I began to talk to the young men. And the next thing I know, I realized they didn't care about me being a postal worker or whatever. They just wanted somebody to care about them. And that's when I realized we had to do something more in the community and began the Expanding Visions Foundation.
We have to take a short break.
Sure.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On Talk of the Nation, we like to be clear about what we're talking about, whether it's movies.
A B-movie was a movie that was made specifically to be on the bottom half of a double feature.
Or the auto industry.
One mid-level executive at a top automaker told me, well, 30 years ago, we were a car company that would occasionally lend money to our customers, and now we're a bank that makes cars.
Talk of the Nation, clear, straight, open, from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation begins later this afternoon at 2 o'clock. And today's Wednesday, so the political junkie will be stopping by to discuss all things politics, the health care bill, Senator Dodd's new legislation, and a possible education overhaul also on the table. Ken Rudin joins Neil Conan on Talk of the Nation at 2 o'clock. 48 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine and a nice day today with a high of 62. Clear skies tonight, a low of 35 degrees. Sunshine for Thursday and a high of 65. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about mentors. Why do we need mentors? What do they do? Who do they help? Joining me today, Marilyn Pritchett, Executive Director of the Mentoring Center of Central Ohio. Very helpful addition to our panel today. And Ann Bischoff, she's Senior Policy Analyst for the Kids Ohio. And also, you might have just heard Cornell Lewis speaking. He's Executive Director, Founder of Expanding Visions Foundation. If you have a question or comment, maybe your own mentoring story to tell as a mentor or someone who was mentored, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, when we were talking about earlier about how much we know that kids who come from impoverished backgrounds can help the most by mentoring, but it made me sort of think about Cornell, when you were talking about what's it like to be a parent, you didn't know how to parent. A lot of kids from two parent households don't know how to parent. And I wonder about that, too, that it's this isn't excluding kids who appear to be have it all. It's just easier to identify the ones who don't. Right, Marilyn?
That's true. The Search Institute from Minneapolis, that's a very respected research entity, particularly about adolescents, says that every young person needs at least three caring adults outside their own family. And it's true that probably every child in Columbus and every other place could use a mentor. But we do typically focus first on the kids of highest need. So that part is true.
Now, you started – the organization started about 10 years ago. It grew from how many member organizations to 40 now?
Actually, I came about 6 months into its history, and I think maybe there were eight or so at that time, and has gradually expanded. We now have 43 partner organizations, from the very large Big Brothers Big Sisters to small organizations that are sometimes affiliated with churches, the Black Nurses Association, Northwest Counseling, Franklin County Children's Services. All these different entities are doing wonderful things with young people in the community. And what we do is to help them do the best possible job. So we coach the people that are the program staff. We train their mentors and do background checks on them with the idea that by the time the given agency has that prepared mentor, they are really ready to be matched with a young person. So they can turn to their waiting lists and say, okay, this makes sense in terms of the interests of the mentor and the mentee. And we obviously need more mentors. We need especially more men, since women tend to volunteer twice as frequently as men. And we particularly also need African-American men. But as Ann says, we all need to step up, absolutely, that there are people on waiting lists, children on waiting lists, that we don't want them to have to wait 2 years to get a mentor because they're growing up right now.
Exactly.
And they're either going to grow up with the skills and abilities and attitudes we want them to have, or they're not going to get those and they're still going to reach age 16,
still going to grow up.
Age 18, they are going to grow up and they'll either have these capabilities or they won't have these capabilities. And we for sure want to make sure they have them.
You talked about screening applicant mentors. That's a big deal because the bad seeds have done a lot of damage to mentoring-type organizations, including the Big Brothers, Big Sisters, and, you know, Boy Scouts. You know, you name it. I mean, the Catholic Church, for that matter. How do you do that? How do you screen for something like that if there isn't a criminal record already?
We screen virtually everybody, and we do what are called BCI, Bureau of Criminal Investigation Identification checks here in Ohio. If people haven't lived in Ohio 5 years, we also do an FBI check on them. Those are fingerprint related. So somebody comes to our site at the First Link office downtown, which is our second mentoring center site. We have state-of-the-art equipment. It beams to the place in London, Ohio. Or we sometimes do a paper check that starts with the places where people have lived and worked for the last 7 years and then goes on to six different checks that are done across the whole country based on that basic identification of that person. So they're very complete. They include predator records and all that sort of thing. But we also do tell our partner agencies, every criminal background check is imperfect. You always must check references and have face-to-face interviews because those are – we also know that most sexual predators don't have a record.
Exactly.
Yeah. You mind if I comment
no,
on that?
No, not at all, Cornel.
Prior to becoming a partner of the Ohio Mentoring Center, our organization, Expanding Visions Foundation, we basically, you know, did – one-on-one interviews and work to get as much information on this person as possible. We have been able, with the help of the Ohio Mentoring Center, to make sure that those background investigations are comprehensive. As it stands, I did all of our interviews. I think that a lot of times, even though, as Marilyn said, you get these background investigations, which are totally comprehensive and thank God they're free coming from the Mentoring Center, you're able to gauge a person, to talk with a person. And as I'm dealing with black males and sitting across from another black male who has said they want to mentor, I usually find out a lot about them. There have been several times where mentors have broken down and begin to cry. Potential mentors have begun to cry. These are grown men who I start mentoring them from the very onset of our initial conversation and let them know that it's okay to start talking and to tell me, because sooner or later I'm going to find out anyway. But more than anything, Marilyn and the Mentoring Center of Central Ohio has given us an extremely wonderful tool to be able to weed out people who are not supposed to be there.
I would imagine a lot of mentors are driven by some pretty emotional stuff that's in their own lives. It's not like they come from some kind of a pillar of perfection.
Yes.
Most people don't come but from pillars of perfection, but I think it makes them such committed people.
Yes.
And sometimes they are there because their own life has been terrific. And they look around and they say, you know, there but for the grace of God go I. This young person isn't getting the fair shake that I got. You know, they don't have someone that is there to help them open doors and see how to apply for college and all of those other kinds of things that need to be done. We know, for instance, that I think this is such an interesting reality, that in middle-class homes, parents expect to get the information for their young person about college, as an example, and bring it home and tell that kid, you know, you've got to get your application ready by January 2nd or whatever. In poverty homes, the parents expect the young person to get that information and bring it home. And of course, that young person doesn't have that experience, that exposure. They may not even go to a school where that information is brought forward. So those are the kinds of things that a mentor who does not have to have gone to college themselves, but that person can say, well, let's look at this online. Let's go to knowhowtogo.org and see what is stated there about getting ready for college, et cetera, or post-secondary education of some kind. So many of those kinds of things that mentors do not really take exquisite work. They just are things that people already know. And we very much encourage people to say, you know, pulling your car into the driveway and washing it with this young person is really neat.
I guess I missed that lesson.
But yeah, just the everyday things. Cornell tells this wonderful story about he's getting ready to take a boy with him to a basketball game, and he has to stop at a bank. And Cornell, you finish the story.
I had one of our mentees with us, and we went to the bank, and I did not realize that he'd never been in a bank before. He was 16 years old, and we walked into the bank, and he stood by the front door, and I turned around and looked because I noticed he wasn't following me anymore, and he was standing there with a look in his eye. And he's 6'2", big kid. And I turned around and went back to him. I said, "Why are you standing here?" He said, "Mr. Lewis, I've never been in a bank before." I said, "Well, no, boy, we don't just stand here. Don't stand there with that look in your eye." I said, this is not good. This is not good.
Doesn't look good.
I said, follow me. And so he started following me, and he just was so scared. Aww. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, they're going to get us here in a minute.
And
so it was a very deep experience.
Oh,
that
yeah.
same young man we took out to dinner. My wife Shelley and I took him out to dinner. He had never ordered off of a menu, mm-hmm. 16 years old. And so when the waiter came, he looked at him and said, can I have some Coke? And the waiter said, "You can have whatever you want." And it really blew his mind. And so
that someone brought it to
exactly,
him. And that, yeah.
Exactly. So these are the things. It's not rocket science. We got to give them some of what we did have and some of what we didn't have.
Mm-hmm. I met a mentor one time who told me a story about how she was just with her
mentee,
and they were chatting and they were driving somewhere, and along the way there was a new subdivision going up, and the mentee mentioned to her that she'd never been in a new house before. That she'd never been in anything like that. And so they spent the day going to open houses and just seeing what a new house is like and what it's like inside.
Sure.
And you reminded me of something else, Cornell, that program that Columbus City Schools has in the middle school level, where if the kids achieve a certain level of attendance during the year, they get to go on this trip to OSU. And they go to a baseball game. It's in the spring. And it's I don't know if they still do it or not, but I've written about it before. And it made me – one thing that really stuck with me on that was that even though these kids came from Columbus, they grew up in Columbus, they almost virtually have never left Columbus, they also very rarely, if any of them, had ever been on any college campus, let alone one of the biggest, if not the biggest campus in the world.
That's true.
And that's kind of shocking when you think about how near yet so far.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Marilyn.
Go ahead. I was just going to say about Fun Day. We do that every year in January as part of National Mentoring Month. We do it here at Ohio State's Recreation Building. We have about 350 mentors
and
mentees.
That's a fun place.
And among the things that we do, along with balloon sculptures and playing games and all of that, is we have someone there from Ohio State that can talk with mentors and mentees about what – does it feel like to go to college and all of that? And Anne, I think, has some great stories about her mentee.
Exactly. You know, it speaks to Marilyn's point earlier about the lack of knowledge, not only from parents, but students. A few weeks ago, I was meeting with my mentee. We were talking about tuition-free opportunities to receive college credit while you were in high school. For example, advanced placement. Mm-hmm. When I talked to my mentee, who's in the ninth grade right now, about seeking out these opportunities, she said, "Oh, they haven't asked me to be in those classes. They must think I'm dumb." And I said, "LaShea, you have a 3.8 GPA. You're doing very well in school. You're working towards a 4.0. You know, this is something you should go for." And I said, "You have to be your own advocate." And I work with her to set goals and to set these high expectations for her. And it's heartbreaking to see that the lack of knowledge that she has about these opportunities that are available for her.
Yeah, and it's amazing. And Anne has hit the nail on the head there. When we start these kids to dreaming.
Yes.
When they begin, you know, what you see is what you will be. And 9 times out of 10, when you take a kid from an impoverished area, the closest they've been to campus is on a CODA bus. And then they don't see themselves there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to be clear in your advocacy for these young people, because 9 times out of 10, they don't even know that they can go to college. Your average college graduate makes $1 million more lifetime than a high school graduate. And so in that instance, with our organization, like we're taking our annual college tour next week. And those young men will experience college in a vastly different way. They're going to get a budget that they have to keep, you know, for the whole 4 days. If they spend $150 on one T-shirt, well, then they spend $150 on one T-shirt. And that, you know, so they're going to have to experience things. But for the most part, we've got some extremely intelligent kids like Ann's mentee in these high schools that aren't getting that advocacy. They're just left to say, look, you're a smart kid. You could have made it, but without someone bringing it to them, mm-hmm. My people perish for lack of knowledge.
614-292-8513. You can give us a call or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email now from a listener. The question for Cornell: I would like to know why a lot of mentoring organizations are failing in reaching our young African-American males.
Well,
I guess that's an opinion they're asserting there, too.
Sure. When I think about the failure of organizations to reach African-American males, a lot of times I would tell a listener, such as the person who sent this in, that it's necessary to get involved. It's necessary to get involved. Myself, I find a lot of people who will just not make that move. So I think the failure is in also recognizing who you're dealing with. I need to have some knowledge about who I'm dealing with. I don't need to go in and just say, oh, I know who I'm dealing with. I know what the situation is here. A lot of times we may look at statistics. We may look at paperwork and say, hey, now I can put together a comprehensive program to deal with this certain demographic. But as it stands, you need to also employ people and have people on your staff who understand that demographic, who are not afraid to say, here's what's going on, here's what is needed, here's what we need to be doing. To reach an African-American male is not an easy thing to do. As you women in this room know, to reach a male is not an easy thing to do. So we have to be very strategic in what we are doing. And they have a lot of the same issues that everybody else has. We need to be more strategic in what we are doing. The grassroots programs that are out here these days, right, to try to mentor these African-American males, those grassroots programs need help. Those of them who are those people who want to know more about mentoring, all you have to do is ask. You know, 9 times out of 10, that kid may be right across the street from you, and all you have to do is say, hey, how are you doing today? You know, what kind of schooling have you had? So
could I jump in?
You know what? Right. Can we come back to that?
Absolutely.
OK, great. We have to take another break. We'd like to take your calls, 2614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Marilyn, hold that thought. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Your membership with WOSU provides for the great classical music and NPR news you rely on. By supporting WOSU, you support all your trusted local and national news and information, as well as the concerts, arts, and music you love. Is it time to renew your membership? Call 1-866-897-9678 or go online at wosu.org/give. And thank you for your continued support of WOSU.
And you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides will be here. 2010 is the worst year for multiple homicides in the workplace in more than a decade. In light of the recent tragedy at Ohio State University, we'll hear about warning signs and crisis prevention with workplace violence specialists. That discussion begins at 11 right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. 48 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today and a high of 62. Clear skies tonight, a low of 35 degrees. Sunny for Thursday, a high of 65. More sunshine on Friday and a high of 65.
Support for WOSU comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about mentoring. What does it do? Who does it help? And who does it in the first place? With Marilyn Pritchett, she's the executive director of the Mentoring Center of Central Ohio. Ann Bischoff, she's a senior policy analyst for Kids Ohio. And Cornell Lewis, he is executive director and founder of Expanding Visions Foundation. Before we move on, I want to let you know that there is a phone number for the Mentoring Center. The Mentoring Center is kind of like a clearinghouse. You can go there and learn about all the different organizations that you might want to volunteer as a mentor with or help them otherwise. 614-233-6368. Or you can go to the mentoringcenterco.org. And we'll post both that phone number and that website on our website at wosu.org/allsides. 614-292-8513. Or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Jonathan, you're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Hi.
Hi.
Actually, I have a couple questions about the screening process and trying to distill them into two
Jonathan,
questions.
You're yes. breaking up. Is there some place it's very hard to hear you?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to pull over and park.
That'd be good.
I'm curious. I don't. My two questions. One is I don't think that there's a process that can stop a dedicated pedophile who doesn't currently have a criminal record.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering whether there's interviews with the mentees after the fact and perhaps even during the process to make sure nothing like that.
That's a good question. Yeah, Marilyn, do you want to respond to that?
Yes, we definitely encourage our partner agencies to have a very clear, good monitoring process. The national standard is now that in the first month of a mentor match that the quote, home agency contacts the mentor and the child twice in the first month and each month thereafter, probably until 6 months or a year. And the parent, sometimes it's the parent that they will talk to, and the following month they may talk to the young person. But there's definitely a feedback loop there. It's not, and in fact, this is one of the things that I think makes the Mentoring Center's coaching so important, is this is not about matching a mentor and a mentee and spinning them off into the universe as if everything will be taken care of automatically. We know, and part of what the Mentoring Center coaches as part of its mentor training is how to build bridges across differences of economics and education and sometimes race. Those are all important things, and we often see that we have suburban white mentors who have been to college connecting with young people who may come from families where few of those opportunities have existed. That is not an automatic match that is going to work. So in order to help people get past some of those barriers that could exist, we coach mentors in how to make that happen. So definitely we are about coaching quality practices, and one of those is monitoring those relationships.
Yeah, and I'd like to piggyback on that quickly. The mentors who come into our program, not one comes into our program without meeting with me. Not one comes into our program without spending a significant amount of time around me with our organization and so on and so forth before they are even introduced to a relationship with any of our young men. And so in that respect, not that I am a litmus test per se for these mentors, but I'm very astute because of my background in different things like being a paramedic, seen a lot in the 12 years that I've been a Columbus firefighter paramedic. And we are taught in paramedic school and throughout our tenure as firefighters paramedics to recognize certain things that may be red flags. And so in that instance, as Marilyn said, you know, we are doing every possible thing we could do to make sure that a mentor or someone who is potentially going to become a part of our program is stable, is doing the right thing, and has a good background. So it's not a 100% foolproof plan because I don't know of one. But I do know that it is the plan that is set in place, and there are parameters, as the Mentoring Center teaches, there are parameters that you can hold people to as far as the line is concerned.
Jonathan?
Yes. Yeah, that considerably answered my question. I know it's not a foolproof process. I just wanted to hear if there was a follow-up and considerable follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
The other question is completely different, actually.
Okay.
And that is that, in my opinion, it's hard to teach something about bad things unless you've gone through, say, the pit of fire yourself.
It's so hard to mentor somebody about.
Let me rephrase that.
I understand this question.
It's going to be easier to teach the evils of drugs and drug use and the failures of drug use if you've been a drug user and have gone to prison and have come out again. You know, the old scared straight kind of way of looking at it. So I think just by perhaps eliminating all of those people, you may have eliminated some of the pool that is going to be the best mentors.
Okay, that's a good question, too.
Yes,
in other words, how do you tap into that potential that a lot of ex-cons have to do good?
You'll be happy to know then that the state of Ohio does not force us to exclude those people. Once we do a criminal background check on someone and we send it to the designated person at the given agency, they now know what that person's record is, but they are still permitted to use that person as a volunteer if they conclude that that is in the best interest of the program and the child. They do need to indicate to the other people in the program that there is a person that has committed a felony, if that is the case, as part of the program, so other parents know that. But that person is not automatically excluded. Often people will say, you know, our rule is that we won't involve one of the people that has that kind of record until 10 years has gone by and they clearly have remade their life.
Mm-hmm.
But we definitely hear that from other programs, and we support that and understand that and have had no issues growing out of that.
Jonathan? Sound good? You still there? Jonathan?
Yes.
Are you still there?
Yes, I
okay.
am still here.
Yeah,
okay.
I wanted to piggyback on that again. I'm sorry, Jonathan. Yeah, he's laughing at me now. The thing about it, Jonathan, I'll be honest with you, and just to give you a brief story, I have a young a gentleman who is one of our mentors. He got into a fight in college. That showed up on his record. He was very upfront with me about that from the very beginning. And so I told him, I said, that is not going to disqualify you as a mentor. I expect my mentors to have some scars. I expect them to have scars because our organization is built around a relationship. Okay? I've had mentors who are now being healed just by the relationships that they've had with the other men in our organizations. We also have mentor meetings where it's just mentors and they're able to get things out that they normally would not be able to get out anywhere else. It's all about relationship for us. So as Marilyn has said, if you cannot work with kids, that will disqualify you from our organization. But other offenses that I know coming from the area I grew up in, will not disqualify you, and definitely be upfront about that type of stuff.
Terrific. I hope you guys get a lot more money in the future.
Appreciate it. Send some in. www.expandingvisions.net.
Jonathan, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Good questions.
Bye.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org with your questions or comments. We have an email from a listener. She writes, I am currently listening to the program.
Yay.
I am a grandmother who has been desperately trying to get my grandsons into a mentoring program. Is there any hope for those that are halfway trying to raise a family? I have been looking since 1999, been on different waiting lists since 1999. And I guess when she
wow.
says halfway raising a family, that means she doesn't have full
sure.
control over
sure.
the situation. Anne, Marilyn, any... Cornell, any who wants to jump in?
Suggestions. Yeah. I don't know the ages of the children. what I can say is that the mentoring center is a perfect spot to call. As Anne indicated, 614-233-MENT, M-E-N-T, which is 6368-233, M-E-N-T. And because we have linkages to 43 different programs here in Central Ohio, what we will try to do is to find one of those programs that may be able to help your young person. And I definitely will say that this also points to our need for more mentors.
Well, it also is kind of unfortunate that she's been on a waiting list since 1999.
I couldn't
why
agree
wouldn't
more.
An organization, if they can't take that person, refer them, you know,
on
cross refer
yeah.
them?
Yeah.
You know,
and that's something that can happen also through the mentoring center, that sometimes there are either age guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some programs will take someone as a mentor that's over 18. Some won't take them till they're 21. There are a variety of issues. Also, site-based programs like school-based programs mm-hmm. Can provide some structure for people and create kind of an ease, because maybe you go, as I did every Wednesday at noontime, and there from in that case, Big Brothers Big Sisters Project Mentor has a staff person that is there at each of the meetings. So that is a kind of easier thing for some people, that they can be at a given program at a particular time, as opposed to being fully in charge of creating, well, what is it we're doing this Saturday or this weekday evening or what have you. So there are a lot of different variations in terms of the kinds of programs. And yes, we need more mentors.
Yeah, Anne?
Yeah, I'd just like to add, this sounds like it may be a kinship care situation, or perhaps the children are in foster care. And if anyone's listening and you know children who are in the foster care system, there is a program through the Franklin County Children's Services that provides services that are uniquely catered to children in this situation. And feel free to contact me at kidsohio.org,
mm-hmm.
and I can give you the name of the person to contact at Franklin County Children's Services to help you out there.
And we also I had a grandmother call me from Georgia last week, and she said, my grandson is there in Ohio, in Columbus, and I need a mentor for him. So she's not even here to as far as the family is concerned. So gave her my information, told her to tell her son to contact me. And as far as things are concerned, you know, when that happens, it's all about connecting with the right people. If you're on a list that long, I find that a tragedy for anyone to be on a list that long.
Let me also just mention that at First Link, they have a foster grandparents program, and they are serving a large number of young people. And the young people that they are serving are ones that are in foster care or foster grandparent care. And the other interesting thing there is that people that are over 55 years old are paid a small stipend for being part of that program. They have to be at a particular income level, but I'm sure we could connect people to that. So if they are over 55 and they are interested in helping with that program, they would be accepted with open arms.
The First Link, what's the number for First Link again?
221-221-6766.
Six, seven, six.
Actually, it's 211.
That's what I thought. There's
I'm sorry, three numbers. I gave you the administrative number.
211 for First Link. You can get references to all sorts of social services and organizations out there, service organizations. Also, Kids Ohio, KIDSOHIO.org. You can go there. We'll post all that stuff on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. If you want to talk or have a comment, question, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@WOSU.org. And, Tom, you're on the air. You have some suggestions.
Yes. I don't know if this is a part of the screening and information exchange, but and I'm speaking from experience here.
Okay.
I think one of the areas that a lot of programs fall down in is not being very open about the potential of somebody getting involved because they had a sexual interest. I think that's a very, very small percentage, but situations can evolve that are awkward, uncomfortable, whatever. And if you raise that issue with a mentor as they're considering being involved in the program, I think it helps them be on their toes. And if you also raise that with the mentee, then no child finds themselves in a situation where it's something that they can't discuss.
You mean talk to about them in advance that you can talk about this if anything happens and instruct them on what's appropriate, what's inappropriate, that kind of thing?
Right. And I mean, if somebody got into a mentoring program with design, sexual design, then I think you need to equip the kids to understand what some of those first steps might be and what might be compromising. And if anything did feel uncomfortable, I mean, you can overplay that.
Right.
The kids are on edge. But I really do think it's terribly important to make that a part of the conversation on both sides so that it's something that's discussable. That's all.
Marilyn?
Absolutely. And our partner agencies, we definitely recommend that they do mentee training or that we do mentee training. And I think you would find that most of our partner organizations talk to children about the potential for abuse and the need to report to their parent or to their caseworker. And again, this goes back to the monitoring process that is very steady. I think that kids are told about safe touch and unsafe touch. And I totally agree that could be about almost anything.
But kids who are in a mentoring situation are the most vulnerable. And they're, like you said, Cornell, they're waiting at the window for you. You know, when you would arrive on Tuesdays, they're so needy, for lack of a better word. So that's something that predators are shooting for. We just have about a minute left. So, Cornell?
Yeah, my
thanks, Tom, for your call.
I appreciate the call there, Tom. The thing about it is I am I'm very concerned about that considerably in our organization. Mm-hmm. And the screening process is the one thing. But also, we have mentors placed around our organization and within our organization, people who come from the Child Advocacy Center to teach us, so on and so forth. Christina Wilson's been over. People like that who help us out to understand what we need to be looking for and so on and so forth. And the parents are engaged as far, and plus the kids, with understanding where they need to be at.
Okay. I guess it's an ongoing battle, ongoing project.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you to my guests, Marilyn Pritchett of the Mentoring Center of Central Ohio, and Bischoff, Senior Policy Analyst for Kids Ohio, and Cornell Lewis, Executive Director of Expanding Visions Foundation. Appreciate you being here today. This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.